You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
I'm hoping Ari Shipp shows up with like a deep dish pizza haircut.
What would you give up that was hard?
I don't eat while I watch the games.
I'm also going to sit in front of a bank of six TVs right. And just OD on MLS on Sunday. So
you can't even get a halftime snow cone?
We're not there crushing Big Macs before.
Never did it before, so I won't do it now.
Doyle treats his body like a temple.
Can we please move
on? We'll move on. Well, we got a great show today, by the way. Really, really good show. Pink Eye Free show.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time Radio and SiriusXM FC, Channel 85 and MLSsoccer.com. It is Monday. Another MLS week is in the past. I am Andrew Wiebe. With me, as always, David Goss. Also in studio, went to the bullpen, brought him up from the fourth floor, Kalen, the Professor Carr.
Is that
Can you intro me like that everywhere I go? Like, you don't do that for me in the morning.
I don't.
Come on,
I know. I need to hook you up.
At work, I should specify.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what. This eighth floor is nice. It's swanky up here. You guys should invite me up a lot more often.
We try. Of course, out there in the swanky confines of the octagon is Matt, the armchair analyst, Doyle. Doyle, how you doing? You feeling good? I mean, we've got a four-man. I don't know how I'm going to do this. I feel like the point guard with too many options right now.
Yeah, I think you are. I think I'm the odd man out right here a little bit. You guys are the big three, and I'll just I'll be 3-and-D. I'll sit in the corner, I'll hit threes, and I'll play a little bit of defense.
Bruce Bowen is in the house, and he's ready to go.
Dude, who's the point? No, do not even mention that name.
Who's the point guard for the Lakers?
Hated athletes of all time. I hate Bruce Bowen.
I'm not the point guard for the Lakers. That's not me.
No, it's not.
I would never. No. Everything that happens in here is I'm like a steel trap. We might broadcast it out to any number of thousands of people and put it on SiriusXM, but apart from that, it does not leave.
I trust you,
this room.
I trust you.
Speaking of basketball, big college basketball going on, Kalen, this weekend.
That's right. Final Four action.
Making your Final Four. Is that your debut, your Final Four debut?
It's my first and last, yeah.
Why?
I actually got to the Elite Eight playing in college, but never got over the hump. Lost in double overtime to New Mexico. Jeff Rowland, a name some MLS fans might remember. Matt Doyle is probably one of the only ones who will know who he is.
You got that one, Doyle? Is that in your repertoire? Is that in the...
It's ringing like the slightest of bells, but no, not
really.
Salt
Lake. Look at this knowledge. Ooh, can I be the analyst?
I know. We should get you an armchair.
But yeah, I went to the game. It was really fun. I was with some Syracuse fans, so they were not...
Is that why you went?
I was just in Houston moving my stuff to New York and got lucky, came up on some tickets from a buddy and went to check it out. It was really
fun.
There
you go. Yeah. So you're not going to be... Bed's coming? No more... No more air mattress life?
The air mattress life, I'm happy to say, is going to be behind me. Still have the shower in the kitchen.
That's harder to move.
That's not going anywhere.
I still maintain that that's convenience.
It is.
Convenience at its finest.
Yes, pregame beers right around the corner.
Yeah, it's perfect. Yeah. It's absolutely perfect. Next time there's a Rebels game, you can jump on, you're probably close to the path, jump on the path and head over there. You got everything.
I might go on Saturday.
Oh,
Sporting Kansas
KC.
City, yeah.
I think I'll be there. Maybe we'll see some folks there. Let's talk about the Red Bulls
real quick.
Yeah, that's where did that come from?
I use Believe for anything MLS related. At NYCFC games, I just sing the Believe song for RSL.
We have been known to sing the RSL song in random spots in this city, so it is what it is. Let's talk about Viernes de Football. This was a contentious match between the Revs and the Red Bulls at Gillette Stadium. A 1-0 win for the Revs, and there were a couple touch points here. You might have guessed that we are going to talk about whether or not you should play on when an opponent is down. We will certainly talk about that. We're going to talk about red cards as well. We've kind of lumped all of these games into two different categories. First segment, it's the games with the red cards because we want to talk about what's going on. And there's a lot of complaints being made by managers, by fans, by players. What's a red? What isn't a red? We'll talk about that. But we will also talk about this idea of whether or not to play when somebody is out of bounds. And here's what went down. Kamar Lawrence goes to ground. He said he felt a pop in his knee. He's on the ground, probably 30 yards out from goal. He's playing center back for the Red Bulls. In this game, Mark Agger does not stop play, does not blow his whistle. He says afterwards that at the time he judged the injury to be not serious. If it is serious or a head injury, I guess if he deems it serious or a head injury, he can stop the match. He said he didn't deem it that, so he did not stop the match. The Revs did not stop playing. Bobby Shuttleworth whacked the ball over the top. Juan Agudelo got on the end of it. He crossed the ball across the face of goal. Diego Fugundes cleared it up. Basically, the whole play kept onside, I believe, by a Kamar Lawrence who's on the ground. So this certainly helped them get a goal after the game. There were some harsh words from Jesse Marsh. Let's listen to those now.
You know, it's shameful for me. You know, the game's supposed to have honor. And they can claim they didn't see him. They can claim that they weren't sure if he was hurt. It was clear as day that he was down on the ground, and not just one player saw him, but their whole team saw him. So that part for me is shameful.
So strong words from Jesse Marsh there. The Red Bulls were not happy about this one. Of course, it's the difference between maybe a point, maybe 3 points for them. Certainly it was a difference for 3 points for the Revs. Jay Heaps, predictably on the other side, didn't seem he obviously wasn't upset. Let's hear what he had to say.
I don't know when he goes down. If he goes down in a situation where we had plenty of time to see him, but I've got to be honest with you, I think he went down in the course of the game. We saw it in Orlando last year. We saw it this week in Kansas City. I mean, I try to have our guys play it to the whistle. So I'm never going to stop them from playing the whistle. I think that, you know, there are injuries that the referee has to stop, or that there are, you have to kick out of bounds. When the game's on and Juan Agudelo gets a ball over the top and he's on outside of the 18, he's got to play that on, and I'd expect the other team to play it on, and I'd be just as mad in the same scenario. I'd understand. I would probably want my defender to finish the play or get to a position where he's not in an offside, or make enough commotion where you just get the referee to stop it. But I don't know. I haven't seen the play. I was watching Farrell kick the ball, so when it turned over, when I saw it, I didn't know when he went down. And I saw Juan where he was, and where Juan gets the ball there, he's got to go to goal. And I'd expect them to go to goal at that point. What happened before that, that's what I got to go see.
Of course, Agudelo did go to goal, and he passed it to Fagundes, who scored. The Revs celebrated, as you will do. Where do you weigh in, Kalen? If you were paying attention to MLSsoccer.com, we were kind of out in front of this. Of course, there was the incident with Michael Bradley and Brad Davis, and Bobby Warshaw wrote a column for us last week kind of exploring this. Where do you stand? What should you do? He wasn't able to find a definitive answer. Former player, what do you do? If you're in that position, if you're the Revs, do you kick it out?
I do, but I think that it depends on the situation. This one, if you're trying to tell... No, it does, because...
This is the middle ground. This is why it's so difficult.
Yeah, in the Brad Davis situation, I can see where Brad kicks Giroux. He doesn't think that he really got him. Giroux's trying to essentially sell it, get him a card even potentially. So when they go to kick the ball out of bounds, Brad's like, I'm not going to worry about this guy. Right. He's fine. I'm getting the ball and playing on.
And that's kind of a difference between these two, because in that instance, you could kind of see the play slow.
Right.
And the Sporting KC center back and all the players, it looks like it's going to go out of bounds. And then Davis is like, nah.
Yeah, but that's why I understand why Michael Bradley's upset.
Right.
Because at that point, once you stop, you assume, okay, we can relax, take our foot off the pedal a little bit, and then a team tries to hurt you. That's where he takes issue. I kind of think this is good for the league in a strange way. I think some of those inside moments in all sports are interesting. Like, I don't know anything about baseball. I know you're a big Mets fan, Goss, but like when a pitcher throws at a guy because his guy got hit before, that's like an insider moment that I find interesting, and it riles up some debate. This second one for me, if you're telling me that New England didn't see Kamar Lawrence down, I'm not buying that in a million years.
So you're put in on goal, and the guy's down behind you. You would turn and kick the ball out of bounds.
No, I don't think they should have played it.
You don't think Shuttleworth should have played it up to him that
exactly.
way.
Exactly. And on top of it, Agudelo's like 10 – he's not just barely offsides. He's like 10, 15 yards ahead right there.
Right. The only reason he's scoring is because Kamar Lawrence is on the ground.
Yeah.
That's 100%
true. Let me bring this up. Late in the first half, Bradley Wright-Phillips fouls Lee Wynn, and it wasn't a vicious foul. He made a – exaggerated a little bit, but it was a foul, and the ref Mark Geiger signaled play on. The Revs put the ball into touch. New York takes the throw in. Bradley Wright Phillips is screaming, and you could hear it on the broadcast. Bradley Wright Phillips is screaming, "I never touched him!" And there are people on the New York bench saying, "Don't give it back to him! Don't give it back to him! Keep playing!" Now Connor Lade did play the ball back to the Revolution. But to me, that stuck out as a moment where one team wasn't buying the injury of another. And actually, the ref didn't buy it either, because Mark Geiger did not call the foul and did not say play on.
Yeah, there's no love lost between these two teams. I think that plays into this. You know, maybe if there's, you've got a buddy who's down, or you know the guy, or something like that, it changes things. But this is a rivalry. You know, these two teams do not like each other, and they're not giving each other the benefit of the doubt. I actually wish the Red. I know Agudelo said he felt pretty bad about it, but 3 points is gonna make him feel better.
Yeah, I mean,
I wish they'd just keep it real and just be like, look, I saw him down. Keep playing. It's on the referee to make the decision.
Right.
And
we needed a win. We didn't have a win. We needed 3 points. We were at home. This is national TV. This is my livelihood. I'm going to go get it.
The one other interesting point is with Dax McCarty. He said, I think it was really interesting. He was honest after the game about maybe his team being a bit naive. This Red Bull team is not going to wait again for someone else to intervene. They're not going to wait for the referee to intervene and blow the whistle. They're going to go and try and break down and foul a guy, stop the play however they can, scream, get the referee's attention. Jay Heaps even mentioned that in his sound just there. That's a bit dangerous when players start taking things into their own hand. Yeah. But if I'm a Red Bull player, I'm learning from this experience. It's a tough lesson, but you're going to see them react.
And that's why I think it's the referee's call. And if New York wants to be upset, they should be upset with Mark Geiger. Because I think it's the Revs' jobs to play. And like you said, it's dangerous for players to have to take these situations in to their own hands. One, whether it's having to foul someone to stop play to protect your own guy when they're down. And on the flip side, whether it's telling a player whose your job is to be competitive to make the judgment to stop playing to get the winning goal in a game.
Right.
To me, that becomes dangerous. And that's why you want the referee to make the decision.
The last point, too, is that they mentioned it being moderately dangerous or moderately injured or severe.
Yeah, seriously injured. If they're seriously injured, then the referee has – that's his judgment call, though.
Right,
if he deems them seriously injured, he can say, we got to stop play, or if it's a injury with, you know, a head injury, essentially.
But for me, location needs to come into play here because that affects the severity of the injury as well. It's not a matter of whether – it's hard to diagnose whether a guy had a severe injury or not, but the location – I think you can tell, obviously, with a head or things like that. But the location matters. If you're a center back on top of the box, that's a lot more dangerous than Kyle Aaron pulling up trying to make a run through.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. We got to say, that decision by the referee, that's tough. How are you supposed to know
but
in this day and age? How do you know?
But that's – someone's put on the field with that job of
agreed.
Making
and
a judgment.
He made the judgment. He didn't stop play. He didn't think it was severe enough, so you play to the whistle.
Right.
That's just the way it works. It doesn't change – I, if I'm the Revs, I'm not apologizing for this one, but they have to know, just like you said, that reputation, this incident, that's going to follow them around a little bit, and it's probably not going to happen.
And a lot
for
of people love, and I think we all do, you know, the culture of the game, and everyone knows when the ball goes out, you return it sportsmanship and all of the manners, and that's what they're saying, the unwritten rules.
Honor, according to Jesse Marcia.
But at some point, you're a competitive athlete, right?
Yeah.
And that's your number one job.
And honestly, I think that's what you're hearing from Jesse Marsh in a lot of ways after this. Like, these guys are upset because they lost. And I understand that. I think that that's a good thing. Like, that's what we want in this league. Now, was this the most honorable way to go about getting 3 points? Probably not. But in September, October, I don't think anybody's going to be busting their balls about it at that
point. It also doesn't mean that there's no honor or civility in MLS. Like, I think this league, the players really have a lot of respect for each other. And if there is a serious injury, for the most part, I really think guys do take that into account.
Yep, you saw in the SKC RSL game, I think it was Chris Wingert, went down on his back, looked bad, and everyone immediately ran over to him. They kicked the ball out. I mean, guys, like you said, understanding the situation.
Kamar Lawrence, an update for you on him. Jesse Marsh saying that he's day-to-day, quote-unquote, ligament damage, but they don't think it's going to be long-term for him. So that's good for them. They've really had some tough luck.
Aren't we all day-to-day?
Yeah, we are all day-to-day. He's had some tough luck on the back line there. They need some healthy bodies, and they need them quick. Let's talk about the red card in this match. Let's talk about red cards in general. The Felipe red card was the one that people kind of got up in arms about this week, and it led to a larger conversation because a lot of coaches are chiming in. Bruce Arena, Carl Robinson, even Jim Curtin, some others saying, hey, there's too many red cards. Before we get to the Felipe one, I just want to run us through some numbers on red cards per game through this date in MLS over the last, 10 or so years. So this is, we're at 0.38 red cards a game. There have been 16 red cards so far in 42 matches in 2016. In 2015, in 43 games, there were 14. So basically the same pace. Now, 2014, they were down to 0.26 per game, only 11 in 43. 2013, this is mind-boggling, honestly. 3 red cards in 42 games. In 2012, 5 in 44 games. And then you've got 17-40 in 2011 and on and on and on. Anyway, the point being that this isn't actually that far out of the norm. There's been a pretty big a pretty big range of numbers as this applies. And Doyle, I look at those numbers from 2014 and 2013 and I say, based on the initiatives that we all knew about ahead of the season, that the players knew about, the media knew about, the fans knew about, this is not that surprising. There was going to be some corrective action to start. Not unlike the NBA when they said, hey, no more shenanigans, technical fouls went up and eventually trickled down. Now, we don't know about the trickle down, but am I off in that analogy?
No, it seems like a correction for what the league, and by the league, I really mean the ownership, deemed too physical play. The type of stuff that we've seen over the years, and I think it reached a head in 2011 when we saw Steve Zaccheloni, David Ferreira, Javier Morales, and Branko Boskovic, four of the more entertaining attacking players in the league, all chopped down with horrible tackles within a span of like 2 weeks. And only one of those guys ever returned to being what he was before. So I think that always lurks in your mind, and I think MLS has gradually done well in terms of cracking down on the rough play, but the start of last season was bad, and I think that continued into the middle of last season when up until, I think there was a turning point. I think DC United went up to Toronto and got a draw at the end of June, I want to say it was. And afterwards, they said, one of the reporters said, what was the game plan? And they said, we went there to kick Jovinko. We knew if we just kept kicking him, he wouldn't stay in the game. He would drift away from the box, and that's how we would get a point on the road. So that's what we did. And I think, look, I don't know that played a role, but I think that in general, refs have been cracking down on physical play since then. And I think that has been turbocharged a little bit at the start of the season. And honest to God, I have no problem with it at all.
Now, I just want to make a point here, and we've heard a lot about it in the last, the whole beginning of the season and when this initiative came out, people saying you've got to protect the creative players. And I think that's a misnomer. You've got to protect all players, because if you look at these fouls, it's not just happening to the number 10s of the world that we want to watch week to week, and we want to see chip balls over the top and take free kicks and do all these special things. A lot of these terrible fouls are coming in the midfield, bad touches, guys steaming in, they're on defenders. It's just protecting players, period.
I think it's the Tommy Mac rule, actually. We must protect Tommy Mac.
I think we should make that a rule.
I'll tell you what, from sitting in these meetings in the preseason, usually when the pro referees come in, people are so exhausted in these meetings that
it's
they
like
bring
between
in these
training.
It's between double days. They come in and show you a couple clips of, hey, this is the new initiative, this is what it's going to look like. But it's totally different entering the field of play, and I think that's what you're seeing early in the season is guys beginning to adjust to how the league is refereed differently than maybe it was even last season, because it does change. And I think it sounds like the numbers actually cool down the last couple years as it goes on. I think there's just a little bit of a learning curve on both sides.
We did this show last year.
We did.
We had this exact show in the first month or so of the season.
We had Peter Walton on, didn't we?
I think so. And everyone was like, there's too many red cards. There's too many red cards. What's going on? The game's insane. There's too many red cards. And like Kalen says, it takes a little while. First of all, a few of these red cards are long touches and guys stretching out. That's partially it's the beginning of the season. Maybe guys aren't where they should be as a player, but also seeing the game a little bit slower than you will as the season progresses. Mm-hmm. And getting adjusted to these rules. We did this exact show last year. It happened. There was a lot of red cards at the beginning of the season, and then guys adjust.
And I think you see them starting to, like, you see, like, a Mateus Laba, and we'll get to this in just a second, on that tackle against LA. You see him, after he makes the tackle, look up and kind of have that realization of, like, oh, no.
And Brick Shea did that against Portland as well, and he got a yellow card, and I'm happy with that. I think tackling is a part of our sport, and part of what makes MLS special is the athleticism. If you look at the English Premier League, it's the same thing. People want to see tackles. People want to see aggressive defensive play. I understand Matt's point as well, that you want to make sure that we're protecting skillful, creative players. That's also a big part of MLS, but I really don't want to see the tackling legislated out of the game.
Right. You don't want to take it.
I think that's a slippery slope fallacy. I don't think it's being legislated out of the game. It's bad tackling that's being legislated out of the game.
But
and Breck Shea's tackle should have been red. That's two legs through the guy's ankle from behind. I mean, that is a definitive red card, and I would be shocked if he doesn't get a one-game suspension from the disciplinary.
But then we wouldn't have his goal.
Did you want more protection when you were in this league? Were there ever times where you said, like, man, I'm just getting...
I wore a helmet when I played. Maybe. Come on, man.
If they would have let you wear, like, chainmail, you would have had that on, too, huh?
No, I don't know. I was not getting celebrity calls when I was playing at all.
But that's, yeah,
I also wasn't dishing out a lot of punishment.
That's probably a good point.
But you don't want a team's game plan going into a game. And I agree with Doyle. You want to kick out the clean. But like, yeah, you have to have a way.
I think. Do you remember that tackle?
Do you remember that tackle that Jermaine Jones unleashed on Dax McCarty in the playoffs two years ago?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah,
but I think wearing down a Jovinko and giving him a physical presence you have to do that. I think that's important, especially if you feel that it's going to make him respond in a way that he's going to start drifting to the exterior. He's not going to be. I've had defenders defend me that way. That's a part of the game. So, but there is a line, because if you're just booting a guy and actually trying to hurt him, you know, that's a different story. Yeah. But seeing how he'll respond, that's a part of it, especially in the playoffs.
Well, let's go through some of these games here. We've talked a little about New England and the Red Bulls, just a little bit.
Small point on the end of that. Both these teams did not play very well in this game. There's a reason the only goal came off a guy laying on the ground, keeping someone onsides.
Yeah.
So there's bigger issues to talk about on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, not exactly running on all cylinders either of these teams. New England, they've got most of their guys, so it's a little surprising. Red Bulls right now, I think you can understand to a certain extent, they do have a lot of injuries. That back line is in disarray, let's say. Chicago won, Philly won. That was a crazy game, and it started us off on Saturday. Snow, wind, I mean... This looked like I would never want to play in these conditions. And any of you Hardy fans that were there and want to tell me about how your popcorn blew away, or about how, you know, it's the coldest you've been in years, or, you know, how you had to have a finger amputated, let me know. I'll send you something. We've got Chicago Fire gear to give away. Valko Panovic, his first win as an MLS manager, that's big for him. And I'm shocked that they got it, because I thought Philly was by far the better team in the first half. Elsinho was out here, you know, Megan Fools doing Elasticos. Sapong had another great one. And then Warren Cravall, your boy. Jim Curtin said at halftime, we told him, don't leave your feet. Don't leave your feet. And he did. He gets the red card. And then Kennedy Igboanike with a goal here. Huge win for the Fire. Tough win for Philly. I got to think that Union fans are upset after this one. They felt like they probably should be sitting up there at 9 points.
Yeah, I mean, at the very least, to get a point out of this one. And that's, you know, I think that's the difference between a team that can compete for a playoff spot and a team that can actually compete for the Shield. And Philly is definitely not in that second group yet. That said, they got some stuff happening. They really do. CJ Sapong is so good at holding the ball up and connecting passes. And we talk about that all the time on this show. But what he's showed over the past 3 or 4 weeks is he's been more active in the 18, finding good spots, the types of spots that, you know, Kai Kamara finds in terms of being able to bang in one-touch goals. Now, he hit the post a couple times in this one. He wasn't able to
action. Oh, Warren Cravall set him up for one of those chances.
Hey, look, it's a good point. Like, this Warren Cravall's been great.
Yeah, and that was a bogus call. No,
I mean, the question for Philly, as I'm looking at it, is how much does Sebastian Letou have in the tank? How much can Chris Pontius play? Can Barnetta or Elsinho be guys who, you know, give you somewhere around 7 to 10 goals and balance out the offense a little bit? Because they all look good individually or in moments, but none of them is a type of guy who can just go out there and be a danger to bag 3 goals in any given week.
Ahlberg, another guy that could be in that list of those 4 or 5 guys.
Yeah, his run downfield. I mean, it was like a fullback.
He's a monster.
Yeah, it was incredible. The Fire, they got to be happy with this one, though. They needed a win. They needed it bad. Kennedy Igboanike is a guy that they need to start scoring.
And he missed a way easier chance than the one he scored a few minutes
later.
That's kind of Kennedy Igboanike's thing.
Yeah, that's kind of the way it goes.
They didn't have a calm, though, so they got a win without their best player.
Yep.
3 points for the Fire. However it comes, ugly day. That wind took a couple off the crossbar.
Have you played?
But no controversy on the card here. We're all in agreement. 100% straight red.
Yeah. That's a red card. What's the worst conditions you played in Chicago?
They're all in practice, to be honest. There were days I'd be driving to training with Leonard Griffin, who was a UCLA guy, and we'd be sitting in the car, and I'd be like, are we really about to practice today? Like, there's snow on the windshield. We're the two California kids. Like, it's got to be. We used to cancel practice at Berkeley when it rained.
Yeah.
Like, ah, gym day.
Yeah. Well, they didn't cancel this one, and as I said, thank you to all you hearty souls who stuck with it. Colorado with a 1-0 win against Toronto FC. Colorado, 4 games, 7 points, 2 goals allowed. This is right out of the Pablo Mascheroni handbook right here. I mean, Doyle's out. They're not really scoring. Marco Papa's going to find a way. What are you going to do?
One of the Doyles is out.
Yeah, one of the Doyles is out. Yeah, you're entirely correct. The one with the better hair.
Connor Doyle.
He's still around. He's still good there. Luis Solanac with the goal here. He was offside, it looked like. A fraction, maybe not a whole ton. But it looked like it was offside. Toronto FC unhappy about that. They were especially unhappy about another red card. Ding, 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 if you're paying attention to themes here. Benoit Cherus sent off for 2 yellows. I don't think he has anything to complain about, and I think he's lucky to not have been sent off for the first based on, you know, the way the rules have gone this year and also just it being a terrible tackle. Anybody have an issue with this one? Toronto FC not feeling like they got a raw deal.
I think they got a slightly raw deal on the goal. But like you, I don't have much of a problem with Cherus getting those 2 yellows. I think that the yellow on his first challenge was 100% correct. The second challenge, you know, his arm is up a little bit. I'm not sure that needs to be called 100%, but at the same time, this part of the season, if the refs are told to crack down on that type of play, then you crack down on that type of play. And his arm was not in, it wasn't in a natural position. It was up.
Yep, I'm with you on that. When he put himself in a position, he ultimately paid for it, but a big win for the Rapids. They're feeling
just
pretty good.
Just so everyone knows, Will Johnson doesn't think that it
no,
was the right
yeah,
call.
Will Johnson. You should definitely go check out Will Johnson's Twitter account. He and Brian Dunseth had a nice little back and forth. They were not happy about this one. Toronto FC, remember, on that long road trip, I'm sure they would have circled this one as one to maybe get a win, maybe get a point. It didn't happen for them. A point was had by Vancouver and LA Galaxy. Up at BC Place, though, 0-0 draw. No Robbie Keane. He had surgery, in case you missed that. No Giovanni Dos Santos. No Steven Gerrard. Jesse Zardes off the bench. Pedro Morales and Kakuta Mane hurt in the first half. Kakuto. I want to throw Kakuta on everything at this point. Kudo was suspended for this one. Thus, no goals. A red card to Mateus Laba. I will wade in once again and say I thought that was a legitimate red card. Didn't have a problem with that one.
Will Johnson thinks that's only a red card in MLS.
Okay.
He's now opened up. He's speaking
he's on
more.
The other ones? Okay.
Now,
we should get him on instant
we
replay.
We should get him on.
Brian Dunson, I mean, they should have done like a double instant
He was asking
replay.
Dunny about a player, but he feels like those studs up tackles, which they were told were red cards in the preseason, like Kalen said, where they had things explained to them. Players aren't getting hurt from them, so they shouldn't be red cards.
I mean, I don't know about that logic. We got to move off that one. Before we do, though, I'm going to throw out a quote from you from Siggy Schmidt today. He says, on this initiative, I think over the long run, it's good. Finding the right balance right now? Probably not, but it takes a while to find that balance. Eventually, things change. Things become different. Not going to happen overnight. Certainly no doubt about that. Before we leave, though, how worried should LA be about no Robbie Keane? Because he's kind of their talisman.
I mean, I think that they actually have a fine replacement in Gio Dos Santos when Gio gets healthy. And the problem with LA is that Keane and Gio want to play the same position so they don't mesh. They don't make each other better. But if you have Gio in that role with Zardes up top and you put Leggett on one wing and Mike McGee or Boateng or maybe even Jose Villarreal on the other, then you're fine. You have a functional attack that can really get at you. The problem to me is that guys have been played out of position all year long, and it just doesn't make any sense.
I agree wholeheartedly with what Doyle just said. Seriously.
No, I know. I was looking at you with a blank face, but I trusted you.
No, I think when you talk about...
That's just his face, guys.
Yeah,
that's
just
his face. This is how it was born and made. Sorry.
RBF, resting blank face.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I just think you said it. Zardes and GDS up top, GDS running under him and being able to create a little. And Leggett was played up top in this game, which isn't where he belongs. McGee's a good option off the wing. It's not going to win you MLS Cup, but we have seen the LA Galaxy. They only need to be firing once they hit August and September.
Yep.
That's a good enough set of players to get you at a point where you can, you know, still be in contention when you hit that spot.
You know what? I'm going to end this marathon segment right now. We got to review some more games. Of course, Soccer Sunday coming up next. We'll hit the mailbag as well. We'll be right back.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
I want to lift my head. Back down, Extra Time Radio. We got a foursome here. Kalen Carr, David Goss, Andrew Wiebe in the octagon. Matt, the armchair analyst, Doyle. Let's run into Soccer Sunday to start things off.
Can we call ourselves a back four?
Actually, that's a great idea.
Kalen's obviously a world-class fullback.
I'm not defending.
You're not? Look, you know what? You push up, we'll rotate over, we'll cover.
You'll be our attacking fullback. You'll be the Danny Alves of the
squad. Yeah, we're water carriers here. I mean, you got to know that.
Wiebe, I've seen you defend. Aggressive is the word I would use to
that
describe
That is probably the correct word. Maybe overly aggressive. Orlando 4, Portland 1, a big win at home for the Lions, and perhaps even bigger for them, Kaká returned, and he did his thing. 2 assists, 1 goal, ran this thing. Kyle Larin left in the first half. He came off, he went on, he came off, he went on. Eventually that hamstring forced him out. But Kaká moved up and had a good one. He even gave our boy, hot boy, Kevin Molina the ball for the final penalty. That was a nice move by him after Molina had missed basically all of last year with that knee injury. Orlando, super good. Portland, not so good. I mean, is this simple here, Doyle, or is there something more to this?
I think it's that simple for this weekend. I don't think you want to take too much away from it. I mean, Portland had to fly 3,000 miles and, you know, a continent away to play this one. I think it's kind of a one-off. That said, Kaká was amazing. I think it was probably his best game for Orlando City. And he started as a number 10. And then when Kyle Larin came off, he ended up playing the rest of the game as a false nine, and he was just as dominant. And it's nice to see a guy control the shape and the tempo of the game without even touching the ball, because it was all about his movement and creating holes in the Portland defense, and it was a great performance.
And we've talked about, there are players in this league, and there have been, you've talked about playing with Cuauhtémoc Blanco, that just, they bring an energy and a confidence to their team. Last year, Portland looked like one team and Valeri came back and they looked like another one. We saw it this week with FC Dallas of what they look like when Mario Diaz is. The energy Orlando was playing with, the confidence they were playing with to attack the MLS Cup champions, to get after it. Molina in open play looked fantastic throughout this game. I thought Winter was very good and useful as well. So it brought a different element to this team from a psychological point of view, yeah, on top of the tactical.
Christian Aguita is he's giving me a little like young Ozzie Alonso right now. The way he wins the ball and turns things around immediately, and with Kaká, if you can get him in the open field after turning them over, it's a recipe for something special. And they got it in this game. They got something special from Breck Shea as well, a nice left-footed hit. I don't know what Alves Powell is doing, basically watching this 1-2 go down with Kaká. You might want to, you know, track your guy into the box.
He loves the game, and he knows a beautiful goal is coming, and he gets out of the
he
way.
He had a great vantage point for this one. Left-footed curler. Yeah.
Great little layoff from Kaká, too. The little things that he does go a little bit unnoticed. And I will say this, that shouldn't have been a red card on Breck Shea. Matt,
well, it wasn't a red card.
Exactly, because we must protect our attacking players and allow them to score goals.
There you go. There you have it. Breck was incredible in this one. Here's what Adrian Heath had to say. His athleticism at times to go the full length of the field, up and down, was mind-blowing. Hopefully Jurgen was watching. Apparently Jurgen was watching because he tweeted about this one, used the old hashtag USMNT. I mean, it's up for debate whether Breck should have been on or off. It was not a great tackle, but as it was, he stayed on. Fernando Adi with one of the not a good PK, just a really, really bad PK. Could have been 4-2. It wasn't. Jack Mack got the goal.
Well, it could have been
Portland.
2-1 at halftime.
Yeah, it could have been.
So that would have changed the game the way it was played when Adi had that save.
Certainly, it could have. Jack Mack with a goal here. He's going to bang in a bunch in stoppage time, you figure, this year, and probably end up with 8 or 9 as it stands. We'll move on from this one, though. RSL2 Sporting KC 1. We build this one as a big rivalry match, and I think it is. These two teams have no love lost based on a lot of things going on. We talked about that last week. But in this one, it was kind of a skeleton crew for both. There were a lot of injuries. There were some suspensions, just some issues on both sides. You had a young Buck and Justin Glad get the first goal for RSL, a nice little header across the goal. Yurima Sissing was good. Jao Plata is Jao Plata. Sporting KC, kind of punchless. I mean, what's going on with them? They were undefeated. This was not the performance they were looking for.
I mean, to me, it's what we identified in the, you know, in the run-up to the season. They just don't get goal scoring from their wings. And it puts all the pressure on Dom Dwyer. Now, Dwyer is a good player. He's a 20-goal scorer in this league, but there's no one striker who can do all of that by himself. And the other thing is, look, no Roger Espinosa in this game. Sporting fell off a cliff last year when Espinosa got hurt and wasn't available anymore. And I don't think that's a coincidence. So I think he helps them on both sides of the ball. He definitely makes life easier for Benny Failhaber, who I thought was decent in his first game back. But I don't think you worry about the big picture for Sporting. You just worry about where the goals are going to come from on the wings.
Well, they were undefeated until this game.
Mm-hmm. It's a good point.
And Real Salt Lake is better on the road than I think people give them a lot of credit for. They really had a 2-1 lead or 3-1 lead going late in Orlando, which is not an easy place to play.
2-0, I think.
2-0?
Yeah. Boom. 2 goal.
Ah, there you go. We got it.
Yeah.
But I think the Sporting Kansas City team, for me, is still one of the favorites in the West. And Brad Davis is, I think he's going to fit in really, really well there. He looks good. No, I think he looks really good early. And
Warren Carvalho-esque.
He finds a guy like Dom Dwyer. I think he's going to give him a lot of goals this year.
And yeah. Benny looked good in his – he was really the only spark, and that's good to see a guy coming off the bench. But Jao Plata is the man. Jao Plata is – I know Javinko is the best player in the league, and Kaká might be as well. But Jao Plata is awesome to watch. And there were moments where Movsisian comes back to hold up the ball off a clearance or something, and he'll, like, play it up the line, and it doesn't look like – anyone's going to get there, and Plata just comes running in, picks it up at full speed, turns his defender. He should have had 2 goals when Movsisian and Mulholland had it to just lay it on a plate for him, and they both decided to take tough shots instead. But Jao Plata's the man, and Burrito wasn't even
built,
in this game.
And they're built around him now. This is the thing. This isn't the same RSL that was built around Beckerman and Morales 2-3 years ago. They want to get out and run. And that's what Plata and Movsisian and Burrito Martinez, who didn't play in this one, that's what they're all about.
Remember, Beckerman was a little bit peeved about the change of guard and the change of tactics. Maybe that could turn out well for them in this one. I think Sporting KC fans, one final note, I think they'll want a little bit more from Tim Melia on that second goal. Not one you probably want to see. Let's move on, though. Two teams that we thought were going to be Supporters Shield challengers and MLS Cup challengers still could be, certainly, FC Dallas and Columbus Crew SC. A 1-1 draw for them. We kind of alluded to it. No Mauro Diaz in this one. Kellen Acosta as the number 10. Interesting move. He just has to play goalkeeper now, and he's basically played every single position in 2016. Just 1 goal for each of these sides. A nice goal for Justin Miram to start things off. And then remind me who got the last one here. Banged off somebody's back
Teshak
off the pole. Yeah,
finally tapped it in. But got the 21 shots for FC Dallas. 17 of them off target, most of them coming from outside the box. And then they finally get a deflection. There was no ability to break down the defense in the final third without Mauro Diaz in this game. And you think Mauro Rosales was brought in for that? He was, you know, the replacement for in these moments. You're not going to win 17 straight games without Diaz, but that's I thought was the purpose of bringing him in, and they didn't use him.
Columbus is going to concede goals like that as well. Will Trapp, they trust him to drop back. He gives one up, but the thing I really respect about Berhalter is he does not admonish his players for trying to play out of the back. He doesn't throw them under the bus. He tells them to continue to play that way. They have a vision. They have a plan in place, and they stick to it.
Certainly consistent.
Miram got the goal, finally back in the starting lineup, but Ethan Finley should have scored at least 2 in the first
half. Yeah, they should have got the win via him. Seattle got the win, finally. Finally, the Sounders with a win. 1-0 against Montreal. Clint Dempsey, set pieces. A nice header for him. That's just what he does, let's be honest. The best moment from this match, though? Ozzie Alonso shoving everybody. He was shoving the ball boys. He was shoving the assistant coaches. He was shoving his own teammates. It was a pretty classic MLS moment from him. Seattle get the win, Doyle. Are there good signs from this, though?
I think there actually are defensively some good signs from this team. I love the Marshall Evans center back pairing, and I think there was a reason why this was the best defensive team in the league at the start of last year before everybody left for the Gold Cup. But the attacking personnel doesn't fit that 4-3-3 that they have. And I think that's why they're going out shopping for a number 10. I would expect one to come in sooner rather than later. And, you know, if you follow Chris Henderson on Twitter, you get to see the world through his eyes. He's on another trip right now, scouting somewhere. It's got to happen soon for the Seattle team because they have nothing from the run of play.
Oh, Alex Anderson came on. He's a Seattle 2 guy, St. Vincent and Grenadines International, just 20 years old, had a couple bright moments. Maybe not the final product from him, but a fun guy to watch going forward.
That was Kalen Carr levels of selfishness from him, I would say.
I played men's league, and we needed Kalen to be a little bit more selfish.
Really?
Do it for us.
I was pulling up from like 30 yards.
Yeah, he was. Just because we were like, hit it. It's all you.
Not my game.
Not his game. We'll finish up with this one. San Jose 1, DC United 1. Patrick Nyarko with a goal in this one. A header. That's one you probably don't see from Patty all that often. And then a goal from Adam John, the new He was a Bash brother, but they don't really have any other Bash brothers right now, so maybe he's just the lone Bash.
Isn't his Twitter handle like Pillow Feet or something like that?
Yeah.
That's legit. I respect that.
Based off that finish, it's pretty correct, too.
Yeah, big man with good feet, just kind of that nick in on the back post. Shea Salinas on the assist with that one, right?
Yeah,
I think it's crazy that Shea Salinas doesn't start because I think that for the amount of crosses that San Jose send in, like that's what their attack is based on, and that's fine. But you need a guy who will actually stay near the touchline and who will hit a cross early on the run. It's exactly what he did on this play. It led to the goal. I think they need him out there in order to be an effective attacking team.
I've watched a few San Jose games this year. I like this team. I forgot Matias Perez Garcia was on their squad or in MLS.
Yeah.
So he played in this game. I don't know.
You were reminded.
I don't know if he brings them anything.
Okay. All right.
And Luciano Acosta for DC United, who has looked talented, doesn't get a lot of minutes as well, similar to Shea Salinas. Apparently, he stormed off after the game, just walked straight into the locker room, didn't shake hands with anyone, seemed to be a little bit frustrated, is what some reporters.
I think there's a comparison between Luciano Acosta and Tommy Thompson. Both guys are so skilled individually, but still just have trouble completing that final pass.
Yeah, some issues there for Acosta. We want to see the best from him. Two quick news notes. Guys, Kayla knows. Tally Hall, signed by DC United. Their goalkeeper issues continue, and they traded for, well, they didn't, San Jose traded for, from Houston, Kofi Sarkodie, some fullback options for Dom, reuniting with Kinnear. That's all. We are going to move on to the mailbag. Some good stuff here. Dave got taken to task.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Good God! What in hell are you waiting for?
Sit down, John.
Thomas, for God's sake, listen to me.
Jazz hands here on Extra Time Radio from my guy, Dave Goss.
Kalen pretty pumped right now.
I'm so confused.
Yeah. Why are you confused?
What are we playing?
We are playing.
Is anybody still listening?
Yeah, that's a great question.
Probably
actually.
Not.
Yeah, that's
we are playing the opening
the
song
ultimate question.
From one of the ultimate Broadway shows of all time, 1776.
Oh, no.
Which
I've exposed myself. I'm not cultured.
Yeah, here's the
I
thing.
Don't think it's considered a culture.
If you want to know what Dave has done on the weekend, if we play a Broadway song, it's because he's been to that show.
Oh, it's such a good show, though. It was the show I grew up with as a kid because I didn't like Broadway because I was a young male and I thought things – I didn't like art on any capacity. And that was the one song. That and Joseph was all we listened to.
Let's start with the mailbag.
You want to go to the mailbag?
Yeah, let's do it.
I feel like we were in a good place already. Okay, so we have been called hypocrites, not just me. I'm going to get called out later.
Okay.
We hated on Will Bruin for attempting to pick up – a drink that was thrown at him after scoring a goal earlier this season and take a sip of it. We thought it was disgusting.
Yeah, we did.
We then later in this show praised Jimmy Nielsen for taking a bite of a brat that was thrown on the field and then throwing it at a fan.
I kind of feel like the brat is a little safer. It's been heated. You know, there's some, you know, it might still be hot. So if something like got on it on the ground, maybe that heat kills the bacteria or whatever it might be. The drink, like if it has a straw. Somebody else had sucked on that straw.
Yeah, that was just some nasty orange drink. Yeah, that was not something you want to be putting into your system. Whereas a bratwurst, I mean, almost any condition that is worth eating.
Right. I'll give a bratwurst the benefit of the doubt. Has anything been thrown at you on the field, Kaelin, that you've eaten or tried to eat?
No, I haven't done anything to be thrown. Maybe I need to score more goals or something back in the day. I don't know.
So he's from Berkeley, though, so you'd have to throw like quinoa or kale at him.
Just like trying to gather it up off the ground.
A healthy choice.
This was so 2007. Okay. It's a good point.
From Edwin Butler, so thank you, Edwin. Robert Clark / RJ Clark, he emails and he says, take a chance on Chanch. I know he's 28. So maybe he's missed out on his opportunity. But what about Chance Myers from SKC? Last show we talked about fullbacks that are Americans that haven't been given a chance because there seems to be not a lot of depth at that position. So RJ Clark saying Chance Myers, Trevor J. Moore, and Trevor McDonald both got us on Twitter. One said Greg Garza. The other one said Breck Shea. I don't know that they specifically answer that question because they said people who haven't gotten chance,
right,
both those
both
guys
have.
But Chance Myers and then, of course, Brian Ciske.
Last names are not your strong point.
On Twitter, and he brings out, I mean, just the Greek god of crossing, just the Adonis that is Taylor Kemp at left back and the future of the U.S. national
big
team.
Big T Kemp guy. Give us a scouting report on Chance Myers. What do you think, Kaelin?
I like him. He's tough to play against. I've played against him a bunch of times. I think he at least deserves a look. Why not? It's not like our outside back situation with the national team is so solid that we can't give anybody a look. Mm-hmm. Obviously, DeAndre Yedlin, though, is emerging on the right-hand side. I remember talking to Jason Christ when we did the big opening day show, and he was talking about Kellen Acosta playing there during his national team tenure or something. And he said, if you're a young player in MLS right now and you want a future with the national team, outside back, it's not a bad place to look.
It's not. We've talked about it on the show. We haven't thought that Kellen Acosta, at least with the youth national teams, especially in this Olympic qualifying cycle, looked particularly comfortable there, but it's a process.
It's hard to break in center midfield with the U.S. right now, right?
No,
he probably has
a
better chance outside. Maybe that's not his strongest point, but he's young. Give it a shot. Why
yeah,
not?
Who knows? Who knows? What else we got in there?
Well, we obviously have a few things about refereeing because that's basically all anyone's talking about. But let's start out with a little bit of a quiz. Mike in Connecticut, and he sent us a few questions that he says he's a referee. And these are some of the odder examples that up. And it's because we were talking about the unwritten rules. And everyone's complaining about that. Bobby Warshaw wrote a piece.
These are obviously written.
These are written. But he actually says throwing a throw-in directly into the ground isn't against the rules. And that seems to be a rule.
But why would you do that?
Well, it's just they say that it has to go over your head and have like loft to it. You can't like drill it straight down into the ground. And he says that that's not a rule. So first rule. What is the call if a player uses their thigh, knee, or shin to play it back to their keeper and the keeper picks it up inside the box?
Got one here? Professional? I'm feeling like that's a back pass still. I feel like if you intentionally, other than with your head, or I guess you could use your chest.
I have no idea, but I'd like to switch the subject and say, if somebody does a flip throw in MLS, should he immediately be barred from the league?
I don't know. I kind of like flip throws.
You have
like
issues with flip throw?
You don't like a flip throw?
Flip throw, no.
It's too gimmicky? It's too gimmicky for you?
I can't get down
can't
with flip
abide
throw.
By the flip throw?
That's tough. You got to like you lose a lot of street cred when you go flip throw it.
Yeah,
it sounds like
you
were like in gymnastics class maybe as a kid. No,
you don't lose.
No offense to the gym.
You don't lose street cred in the throwback late 90s ODP school. You probably get pushed up to the top
team. Oh, you're making
team.
The national team right away.
So the answer to that rule, by the way, was that it is not a pass back because the rules specifically say you cannot kick the ball back to your own keeper, and kick only means using your feet. Second question.
Ooh.
A direct kick is awarded to a team in its defensive half. A player passes it back to their keeper. The keeper does not touch the ball, and it goes into their own net. What is the call?
I'm going to give him a goal just because the keeper needs to pay more attention. This is a learning opportunity for that goalkeeper. This is
Doyle?
Not by the rules. This is just kind of like, you know, crime and punishment.
That's a quarter kick.
It's a corner kick.
Yeah.
You are aware of that because?
I'm aware of that because I'm the exact type of nerd who occasionally plays soccer trivia games with my friends.
And it is. It's a corner kick. You cannot score an own goal off of a direct kick. And the final question here, a player juggles the ball up, lets it hit the ground, and then pulls their jersey out, captures the ball inside their jersey, and then runs into the opponent's goal. What is the call?
This one I do not know.
That's the mad rush. That
Mike
doesn't
says,
count. That should,
by the way,
should never count.
This, Mike says, is not a hypothetical question. I was reffing a U-12 game a few years ago. This exact situation
of course
happened.
It did.
I was thinking this was a Simon Borg move from the media game.
If there's a kid anywhere in the United States doing that in our game, we will never win the World Cup.
Whoa.
Push it back another 10 years. Our development system, we need to rethink everything. What is this kid doing?
Scorching hot.
What he's
here.
Doing is he's being creative and he's yeah. taking risks.
That's right.
Risk everything. Mm-hmm.
Oh. Mm-hmm. What's it called?
It's a handball. The shirt is an extension of the hand. The example used in their refereeing class was if you throw a cleat at the ball and stop a goal, it's a handball as well.
I think somebody
throw a cleat at the ball? Yeah. That would be brilliant.
Next,
are you kidding?
Tuesday night, Brooke Hatton, baby. I'm just going to have an extra cleat in like my back pocket just to throw at the ball. We'll see how that works.
I don't know if you're
me.
Allowed to carry
it. I wouldn't be surprised in some of these Brooklyn leagues if someone's got an extra cleat.
Yeah, probably not. Oh, is somebody going to burn you before we get out of here? We're running out of time.
Mike from Connecticut, and he's killing it. Yeah, no, we have an email from Matt Roberti Yellow. Now say it in your best Mario and Luigi accent. And you might be
blurry. Are you from New York?
Yeah. Keep up the good work. He is a Nova fan. He's mad at me because I think I called him a Sperry-wearing bro when he said that in 2008, Sperry's weren't even that popular. So no bro culture there, my friend. Just purely ecstatic to send those Jayhawks packing. He also said he's obviously the one who wrote the whiskey-fueled burst about Kansas last week. And that's how we're going to end the show.
Yep, that is how we're going to end it. Good luck to Villanova in the final tonight. Thanks to you guys for joining us. It was fun. It's always fun. We will see you back on Thursday. Enjoy your week, everybody.
You're listening to Extra Time Radio.